I got my peaches out in Georgia.
Oh yeah.
I get my from California.
That's that.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Dramatic scenes and pictures coming out of Prescott, Ontario, where two freight trains collided along the tracks, disrupting freight and passenger rail service in eastern Ontario. We saw pictures of the emergency crews there and the damage from these two trains. Joining us now near Prescott, Ontario, with CTV Ottawa, Nate Vandermeer. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Christy.
Tell us about what happened here.
You know what? When you're at the scene here, and I know there's lots of pictures from the overpass, it's a miracle that no one was killed here. One person did sustain minor injuries, and he climbed out of the locomotive on his own. I spoke to a few employees here at Northern Cables. It happened right behind this facility, and they were first on scene, and they jumped on the locomotive to try and get him out, and the fellow came out the window and kind of laid on the train and knew who he was, where he was, and then they helped the medical crews take him away. But it's amazing that no one was more seriously injured today.
It really is incredible when you see the damage from these trains, the side of it completely crunched in, one of it, and the debris everywhere on the ground, to think about the injuries that could have happened here. So happy to hear that no one was seriously injured. Did they give us a sense of how this could happen or what exactly unfolded?
No, I mean, CN did release a statement just saying two trains did collide. We don't know the specifics of it. I have heard one was coming off a spur line while the other one was heading west down the main line. We won't know until CN does an investigation of what exactly happened. But four locomotives in total were involved. Two of them now sit on their side, and a total of 16 cars are now laying in various positions all over the tracks here. And one train car did come extremely close to a natural gas line. So that's, even as the Prescott mayor told me earlier, that's if you could have luck happen in a situation like this, it happened today.
And so what did witnesses tell you? People nearby, I know you spoke to an employee at Northern Cables, which is located right next to the tracks in Prescott.
They heard a loud bang. I mean, in the plant, it's loud. There's machines running. Some employees said they thought one of the machines inside had blown up, but which happens regularly here with this plant. But the sense was that they heard a bang and then they heard screeching, and it wasn't a machine because the noise kept lasting longer. And then they looked outside and there was a cloud of dust. And then everyone kind of sprung into action and jumped the fence to get over there as quick as they could.
Now what happens in terms of Via Rail service?
Via Rail, I've been told, is going to be rerouted through Ottawa. So there will be significant delays for that service on this line because Via Rail does share this line with CN. So they will take, I'm unsure where they would come from on their Montreal route, but they will go north to Ottawa and they would come down to Brockville, I believe, on that line, and then head to Toronto that way. So if you're taking via rail over the next few days, I mean, expect some serious delays with that service.
And what about in terms of the investigation, the Transportation Safety Board? What happens there?
Well, they are on scene now. I mean, everyone's doing their investigation. It has started. I've seen them bring some equipment in here to start removing the debris and maybe get these cars back on the track. But, I mean, this is going to be a lengthy investigation and probably a lengthy cleanup. Again, we're just at the beginning stages of this. No one has confirmed to me what exactly has happened. I mean, and they want to do their due diligence to make sure they have all the pieces to the puzzle as well. But, I mean, we won't probably know for another week or so what exactly caused this.
Thanks so much for coming on the show, Nate.
Thank you so much.
Wow, what an incredible scene there. Just so much destruction. The tracks are all ripped up. That's Nate Vandermeer joining us to talk about the Via Rail derailment near Prescott. And you just look at those pictures and you think how lucky the people that were involved in this are not severely injured. That CN rail line remains closed through Prescott, Ontario this afternoon. The cause of the incident under investigation. And as he was saying, you could see on the scene there that one person was pulled from the locomotive, but no serious injuries despite the devastation and the mess there. All the crew members were taken to the hospital as a precautionary measure, but thankfully everyone's okay. 417 News Talk 580 CFRA. Just say we're
good. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. So let's at least agree.
Anti-vaccine protests happened across Canada yesterday, including here in the capital. Demonstrators rallying against vaccine certificates and passports. Some of the largest crowds we saw in Canada were in British Columbia. In Vancouver, for example, thousands of people blocked the Vancouver General Hospital. There was a similar scene playing out in Kelowna. And in Ottawa, a crowd as well, but a smaller crowd, that is. Christy Cowan joins us now, registered nurse at the Civic Hospital. She's been redeployed to the ICU during the third wave. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Good afternoon.
How do you feel about these protests?
It was a little confusing, to be honest. I didn't know it was happening. And when I left work yesterday, I saw them all protesting. And they had signs that were a little misleading. One said, we are all essential. One said, my body, my choice. With everything going on in Texas, I thought at first it was a pro-choice rally. And then with the issues nurses are having right now with Bill 124, I thought it was to do with that. So I was very surprised afterwards to find out it was to do with vaccinations and the certificate.
Mm. How does that make you feel as a nurse that has been redeployed to the ICU and as somebody who works in healthcare daily to be confronted by a protest like that?
Well, it just seemed all really unnecessary. I'm still confused about why they were outside the hospital. You know, the hospital didn't make these rules of the vaccine passports or certificates. We're all just working and trying to take care of our patients. And I heard over the country too, some of them were blocking emergency rooms, and it just goes against everything we stand for as nurses to protect the public and to care for people. So it was a little upsetting to see that. It definitely doesn't represent nurses or the hospitals that they were protesting at.
If you had an opportunity, and I don't know how you'd feel about this, but if you had an opportunity to say something to the people that are demonstrating that feel this way about vaccine certificates, about mandatory vaccination, what would you want to say?
Something appropriate.
Well, you know, we are on live radio, but your call.
I don't know. I feel I've had a couple conversations with people who are against it. And
oh, really?
I'm just not quite seeing their point of view. I would love to hear where they're getting their information from, and I'd love to see them look at some peer-reviewed scientific research articles opposed to the opposite of that. And what I've kind of come to see is I just am feeling a little defeated, and I don't think I can change their minds.
You said you've had some conversations. You've taken that opportunity. These are people that you know personally, or these are people that you talk to on the internet. What kinds of conversations are we talking about?
Yeah, someone I know personally is vaccine hesitant. And instead of throwing information and research at this person, I asked for their opinion and asked for their side to hear it. And I didn't want to cause any rifts or ruin any friendship. So I just listened. That doesn't mean I agree with it, but I listened, and that's all I can do.
At this point, you know, given the modeling that we're seeing right now, and I do want to say Ottawa Public Health is very optimistic about the fall. Dr. Vera Etches said today, I think we can do this. I think we can get through this because Ottawa has always fared really well. That being said, despite the optimism, there is modeling out today saying that the fourth wave is going to be significant. How do you feel about approaching that in your job?
Yeah, I would say I'm in a bit of a recovery phase right now. The third wave was brutal, and I think a lot of us are still recovering from it, and we're really focusing on self-care and wellness and taking care of ourselves right now. Regrouping with family who we haven't seen in a long time and just trying to recover. And I haven't thought too much about the fourth wave, to be honest. It's really, really hard to think about it mentally and having to go back to what it was like during the third wave. But I think if it happens, I think we know that we have the physical capacity to do it again. We've done it once. We can do it again. What would concern me more is if we're going to have the staffing to do it again, to make sure that nurses are well enough to come to work and continue coming to work and to continue staying in the career.
Because that burnout is very real. This is not a theoretical thing. This is something that you're actually seeing showing up at your workplace.
Yeah, burnout is definitely a concern. COVID is no longer that common in hospitals right now, that doesn't mean we're not full. we still have patients, we still have backlogs of surgeries, and people are really sick that are coming in because they've been waiting. So we're still very busy. It's not like we're empty. So we haven't really got a chance to recover physically, mentally maybe a little bit, but not quite physically.
Listen, I greatly appreciate you coming on the show. I know it's tough to talk about this stuff, Christy, but thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Christy Cowan, registered nurse at the Civic Hospital. She's been redeployed to the ICU. She was redeployed during the third wave, talking about the prospect of what is to come this fall. And there was one tweet that I read. This was about the healthcare workers. This is somebody who is at UBC Medicine, is a family medicine resident, who tweeted about this. This doctor said, "They used to bang on pots and pans for us. Now they bang on our hospital walls and windows. I am so tired." And that was just a really powerful tweet for me, because it was a quote tweet of a bunch of hospital workers, some of them in caps, masks, looking out the windows, and just looking at the huge crowds. And we didn't get a huge crowd here in Ottawa, but they certainly did in Vancouver and in Kelowna. And just kind of the look of disappointment and exhaustion on the faces of people that work in healthcare as they're looking at that, as they're inside, trying to keep people healthy, trying to do a pretty difficult job. And in that moment, just reading that tweet, I felt for them. I really felt for them, because they're not just doctors and nurses and healthcare workers, they're people. And that's gotta hurt. Just after 4:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So the French language debate is coming up tonight, and I asked you off the top of the show earlier, will you watch it? Does it matter to you? Are you excited about it like me? Or do you think I'm a total nerd? Well, we'll have our political heat panel joining me in a moment, and I know they'll all be watching, and we will get to that. But I do want to quickly touch on something that I don't think we have talked enough about. And I want to raise it now because it is an important story. I want to give credit to the CBC because CBC News broke the story. But there's a candidate for the Liberals in southwestern Ontario, Raj Saini. And he has been repeatedly accused of sexual harassment, 4 different cases where he allegedly made unwanted sexual advances or inappropriate comments to young staffers. The CBC said one staffer told them she was so upset by what she endured, she was so upset by what was going on, that she attempted to take her own life in his office last March. So first and foremost, I just want to say, when you're talking about a story like this, the most important thing is the people that are making these allegations, the women that they say he worked with them and he was not easy to work with, and they made the people around him uncomfortable and made them feel like they were being sexually harassed and they were not safe in the workplace. That should be the focus. And those people should be heard. But in order to make sure that they're heard, in order to have this conversation, we do have to look at the way the party treats these kinds of things, right? Like a workplace treats these kinds of things. The way that it is treated is important, because it also signals to other people they can come forward. The one woman filed a complaint with the Human Rights Commission and told CBC she considered taking her own life because she felt like she had nowhere to turn. She had no options. These are deeply disturbing allegations. And the question is the party doing enough here to address these allegations? Liberal leader Justin Trudeau has said, "We have a zero tolerance policy towards harassment in the workplace," but he's running for re-election, right? This guy's running for re-election. Here's what Trudeau had to say about it earlier this week.
"Just to be clear, are you saying that you believe your candidate and not the women?"
I have said that Mr. Saini has shared the processes. There have been rigorous processes undertaken that he has shared the details of. We know that it is extremely important to take any allegations seriously, which we certainly have, and we always will, because everyone deserves a safe workplace.
There's a lot going on here. And I've got some questions. The CBC story quotes the Liberals as saying they had no knowledge of these allegations, but then Trudeau has said there's a rigorous process that's underway. So the question is, which is it? And then at the same time, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Conservative Party of Canada and their candidate for Dartmouth Coal Harbour, Troy Myers, who agreed to withdraw his candidacy after the party learned of a serious allegation against him. 4:43, let's bring on our Political Heat panel.
Now, Political Heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The line, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Bill Morneau, Daniel Perry, consultant with Summa Strategies, and Cam Holstrom, consultant with Blue Sky Strategy Group. Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hello there.
Hello.
Daniel Perry, I'll start with you. What do you think of the Liberal Party's handling of this? Should this individual be running for re-election?
Put it simply, I'm very disappointed. And of course, that's easy to say as like a white conservative, but I think everyone, when we look at politicians, we want to have them held to a higher standard. And it's very clear from reading the story that there's a repeated pattern here of behavior. And as a self-proclaimed feminist, I think Mr. Trudeau should walk the walk and follow in the footsteps of the Conservative Party and ask for the candidate to withdraw his candidacy so that they can get to the bottom of this issue, because it's very troubling to hear this. And I don't think it's what a politician should be, have the opportunity to be reelected because of this.
Yeah, the thing, Daniel, that stuck out to me, I already acknowledged it, was that they said, we're looking into it, it's being rigorously investigated, but then you already said you didn't know about it. So that really doesn't check out.
No, it doesn't. So it seems like there's probably more to the story here. And I really hope the Liberal Party does dive into this. But at the same time, I think we need to respect the voters and allow them to have another option for the Liberal Party in that riding.
Sharon Carr is the former Deputy Chief of Staff to Bill Morneau. How do you feel about this?
Listen, this is a topic that I took a lot of I took a stance on yesterday online on social media when I heard the story and I saw Ashley Burke's story. Listen, I am a lifelong Liberal. I am a donor. I am a voter. And I have never been so embarrassed and so completely disheartened by the response that came forward with this. We don't take things like this lightly. Somebody tried to take their life. And we should look at this with every serious lens. And unfortunately, I was not happy with the Prime Minister's response. I felt that it was a non-answer and individual words were there, but together in a sentence, nothing made sense and nothing was comprehensible. It's not comprehensible. I personally found that to be completely off-putting, and it's not my party that believes in that. So I was very vocal about this yesterday, and I think that we need to take these things seriously, and I don't think this is being taken seriously. We see people in positions of power abusing younger staffers in sexual harassment, and it happens today. We saw it with Rick Shirelli, who's a counselor in Ottawa, who sent absolutely inappropriate messages to a young woman. So when is it enough? Someone tried to take their life, but when is this enough?
So on that, some very strong words from Sharon. And I want to say we do actually have somebody coming on the show in about 15 minutes to talk about this, because there are some interesting allegations flying back and forth and an explanation from the counselor's office about these messages that have gone out saying that it was hacking. But we'll leave that for 15 minutes from now. Cam, I want to get back to this. First and foremost, we've got to talk about the people making these allegations. They are the people that matter the most. Nobody should be subject to sexual harassment ever, let alone in the workplace. And so what's going on here with the way that the Liberal Party is handling this?
They're absolutely botching this. And I appreciate what Sharon said, especially the first thing she raised about the attempt, the thoughts of suicide. Because when I read that piece, that's the part that I saw someone who was looking for help, who was looking for assistance and was being left hanging with none. I know when I was on the Hill with NDP, I counted myself fortunate to have a union to lean on to where I could reach out in outlets in these cases, or if something like that ever happened to me, to be able to actually lean on someone and have that support and not worry about my job being put at risk because of it. And let's face it, those are the pressures that a lot of young staffers face and young women like the individual in this case was. The fact of the matter is pretty straightforward. I don't know what's so special about Raj Saini that he must be protected in this way. And it's not one incident. There are multiple accusations. So again, what's so special about this guy that he gets to keep his spot in the caucus, yet the others, yet someone else must go? It's not like other members of that caucus hadn't been thrown aside during this whole parliament. Mm-hmm. You know, there was Marwan Tabara, there was the other MP out of whose name escapes right now from Don Valley North, from Don Valley, who hired her sister. Like, those people were thrown aside, no problem, and they're no longer there. If you're only now addressing this because you didn't publicly address it, or because you're saying you found out now but you somehow knew already, that's on them. That's on the Liberal Party. And the longer they stick with this guy, the worse it looks. And again, at this point, I don't know what you're gaining. Yeah, at this point, you lose a candidate. You can't replace them. It's too late. But you know what? That's the price of admission right now. You guys didn't say anything long before this. So there has to be a price to be paid here somehow. And the fact that they're trying to paper over this, it's disrespectful to the women involved. It's disrespectful to so many people. Again, it's just another flip-flop on how this government says one thing and then does another. And it's just an especially egregious example.
4:49, let's talk about the French language debate. So we've got a pretty interesting situation here. You've got Trudeau, who's always supposed to be the strong campaigner, who's starting to flag behind a bit. I don't want to say necessarily flailing, but not looking as popular as he once was, or as he hoped he would be, with the polls showing that the Conservatives are starting to get a bit of a lead here. Daniel, what do you think Trudeau needs to do to try and derail the momentum from the O'Toole campaign?
I think tonight's debate is going to be very exciting for that reason. Usually in a French debate, it's usually the Liberals versus the Bloc, but I think we're going to see some more debating between Mr. O'Toole and Mr. Trudeau. And I think Mr. Trudeau really needs to hone down on his plan for Quebec and really highlight his experience in Quebec and his ability not only just to use the French language, but also connect to voters that way. Because Mr. O'Toole will face a challenge because he's not from Quebec. He's not naturally a French speaker. His French has gotten better, but I think Mr. Trudeau will have the upper hand. And I think we'll really see him try to use language as a leverage tool against Mr. O'Toole.
Sharon.
I would agree. I would say that Mr. Trudeau and the Prime Minister Trudeau has the upper hand here. His French is phenomenal. It's his first language, I would say. Mr. O'Toole, on the other hand, is what I've been hearing from people in the inner circle is that has really been trying the last 24 hours to surround himself with just French speakers to ensure that he is getting the language right. It's, I would say today is a pivoting point because the debates usually tend to lean in a certain direction in terms of where the polls are going. So it'll be interesting to see. But we have to remember, we've also got the dynamic of the Bloc, and we've got Annemarie Paul from the Greens in there, who is actually quite good with her French as well. So this will be a interesting debate between Mr. O'Toole and Prime Minister Trudeau. But it'll also be interesting to see how everyone does with their French, because it is really important in Quebec as well.
Yeah, Kim Holstrom, your thoughts on the French language. You know, you've got NDP leader Jagmeet Singh and Bloc Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet. I do just have to say the Green Party's Annemie Paul, though, and the People's Party were not invited to participate. But you think about the French language debate here and Conservative leader Erin O'Toole. It's the first time that he's going to try and flex his French language skills. Do you think he's going to be able to do it?
Mais on va voir ça serait pas mal intéressant si il est capable de faire. Sorry about that. I think that, you know what, it's interesting. I watched him on Radio Canada on Sunday night when they did the five leaders on one-on-ones, and his French was decent, definitely better than Mr. Scheer's. But I found it, as someone who has a degree in French and used to speak French, used to teach French. Pardon me. I found he was repeating a lot of lines. He had a lot of canned lines ready to go in situations, and that works great when you're not getting a lot of back and forth, you're not being attacked by somebody that you need to kind of pivot and respond. Now he's going to be attacked, and it won't just be Mr. Trudeau. Mr. Blanchet is going to go at him hard, because right now the Bloc is starting to slip, and the main beneficiary could be Erin O'Toole. So he has to go at him hard, especially since all of a sudden François Legault is enamored with Erin O'Toole rather than Yves-François Blanchet. And we know that Yves-François Blanchet has tried for the last 2 years to be Mr. Legault's proxy in Ottawa for the longest time, and all of a sudden he's kind of being rejected. And you know what? He seems a little upset about the whole thing. He seems a little brittle on the campaign trail these days. So I could easily imagine him getting his elbows up and trying to throw him around a bit. And for Mr. Singh, his French is solid. He was out there slinging his Punjabi poutine today. He's had a happy mood. You know what? I think he has a great chance to have a good night.
Okay, I'm sorry. The poutine truck thing is just the most ridiculous headline that I think we've had to date, Daniel. That really kind of upstaged things today. Or did it actually get the NDP more attention?
First off, it made me want to get some poutine. So I think.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing. I wanted some sweet curds and gravy.
It looked really good. I think it was a great PR stunt, to be honest with you. It really put Mr. Singh in his element of just being that friendly, great voice and really kind of showing that personal side of him. And I think that's when he's being genuine, that's when he's being the best at being a politician and selling his policies, because it's very relatable, especially for young voters like me. Seeing that, you're like, all right, he's pretty cool. I want to
be like, oh yeah, the wheels fall off my poutine truck all the time.
Exactly. I think that's just a small blip in the road. Every campaign has it. Thankfully, it wasn't his tour bus, because it's always a bad image of a bunch of people trying to push a bus forward. But at the end of the day, I think it's a small blip in what otherwise went off as a very good PR stunt for him.
Sharon Kaur, I want to go back to something that people have said during this panel, which is, you know, the lines can be a bit rehearsed and canned if it's not in English, and if you're not a natural French speaker or you're not quite there yet. Yeah. But Sharon, are a lot of the lines not pretty much canned anyway? Like they all often come off as a bit rehearsed, and I generally find it doesn't really feel like a debate so much as it feels like one person saying something and then another person reciting their lines.
Absolutely. I think what you're going to see in today's debate is that it's going to be a bit similar to what we see in question period. There's going to be questions asked and there's going to be questions not answered, and it's going to be talking points. But that being said, there is a level of unpredictability in some of these debates in terms of what direction they go. The place where you really see the unscriptedness is when the banter begins. So I think you'll notice that there, but I think we're absolutely right that everything is pretty scripted, but you have to like kind of look at the nuance and read between the lines and the banter, because that's where the unscripted stuff will come out, and we'll notice kind of some of the real taste of politics come out there.
Yeah, that's where the fun fodder comes in. Cam, final word to you on this one, what you're expecting tonight.
I'm expecting it to be pretty lively. I personally have enjoyed watching the TVA debates when they've done these, because just the setup, just the way they do it, I think is very interesting, and it kind of forces the leaders pick their spots, but at the same time, it makes for some very interesting pairing setups that we haven't seen in the past in the national debates. I think the national debates could have probably learned a thing or two from their format. But yeah, I think honestly, there's a lot riding on this, because yeah, most Canadians outside of Quebec are not going to be watching this tonight, but most people who are paying attention and more people outside of Quebec will look for people's impressions as to what happened. Because you know what, there are seats up for grabs Quebec. But if somebody sees a swing in the balance of power, if the Liberals and Bloc are down and the NDP and Conservatives are up, you know, all of a sudden you could have more seats in a governing party from Quebec. You know, that could change people's minds outside of the province. We've seen that happen before, and you know, it wouldn't be surprising if it happened again.
Cam, Daniel, Sharon, thanks so much for coming back on.
Thank you.
Take care of you.
Sharon Kaur, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Bill Morneau, Daniel Perry, consultant with Summa Strategies, and Cam Holstrom, consultant with Blue Sky Strategy Group.